From our headquarters in Oslo, Norway, and on behalf of our host, Robbie Peralta, welcome to the Mnemonic Security Podcast.
I have read and accept the terms and conditions. Meant no one ever as they double-click the confirm box at the bottom of a long document, font size 7, Times New Roman. We all know by now that if we aren't paying for the product, then we are the product. But for some reason, it shocks us that there are thousands of companies out there selling our data. Rewards programs, surveys, apps, cookies and web beacons, social media, and why not? Maybe I'll enter this online contest too. YOLO. Long story short, if someone wants to know something about you, they're likely only a few clicks and a credit card away from figuring it out. And on a serious note, consider the implications of connecting an unethical large language model with an equally unethical data broker service. And given that that's probably happening as we speak, we only have a few options. Put our tinfoil hat on and carry out business as usual. Delete Facebook, stop using Google and find the old Nokia. Or as today's guest would probably advocate for, consider using a data removal service. Darius Benuevas, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Robbie.
Can you please say it properly for us?
Darius Belaevas.
I like your last name. I just can't say it. Maybe by the end of the conversation, we'll do one more try.
All right.
Welcome. Where are you coming? Where are you sitting at today?
In Vilnius, Lithuania.
Lovely, lovely. So I think the story behind this podcast started me. I was listening to another podcast that I listened to, CyberWire. And I believe it was one of your competitors was please delete me. They were talking about, yeah, delete yourself from all the services that the data brokers know about you. And I thought, that's interesting. Data brokers, I haven't talked about them for a while. And I looked up what was available in Norway, and you popped up. So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and the company that you work for?
Sure. So, with Incognito, I actually joined with a background in marketing. So when it comes to the part of targeted advertising and so on, so this is something I had a chance to touch hands-on back in the day. And now for the last couple of years, I'm leading Incogni from the sort of vague idea of the problem we want to solve to now, well, according to Google Trends, most popular service when it comes to data removal.
Cool. When you were in marketing, what was your relationship to data brokers and data in general, like the acquisition of purchasing from data brokers?
For me personally, I was mostly working with a big platform, so Google Ads, Facebook Ads at the time. I didn't really knew that much about like data brokers on a bigger scale. And it's only when we got the sort of feedback from the users that, okay, so what do you need more help with? And the topic of data brokers, personal data removal started coming up. Only then we like deep dived into, okay, so what's going on in here? And like, then you find out that, okay, so it's a massive ecosystem and it's pretty scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at it. I was Googling a little bit. It says the data broker market is going from $280 billion in 2023 to $382 billion in 2030. So $100 billion increase. Gartner says that they estimate that there's around 5,000 data brokers globally. And there are companies like yours that are growing, and the need is not going to go anywhere, I guess. So they think this is going to be continued to be a thing in the future. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and this is something that we realized early on when we were sort of taking Incognito from the problem to potential solution. So what we tried is, let's try to opt out from those data brokers. We found a list, and just on a sort of personal basis, let's try to send those data removal requests on our behalf personally. And what you realize is that you need like a patience of a saint to go through the process. Like just a few days in, you have a full inbox of email threads, of back and forths, and you realize, okay, so this is a problem. Like you have those tools, but in practice, to actually trying to delete yourself, it's a massive undertaking.
Yeah, because I don't think I've ever actually done that myself, but you can technically, I guess, go to an individual data broker, or you can go to a person that's holding your data and ask them to delete your data. And that usually for a person like me would go over email, right? So you're basically doing that on a huge scale. And I would assume, I would hope for your sake that it was automated, right? How many different data brokers are there? Would you have to send that request to?
So for us right now, we cover just over 150 something, but that number is ever changing. But the problem is that there are some limitation and exceptions. So not all companies that actually collect and sell your data need to register. So there is quite a bit of work in trying to find them to then understand what kind of data they collect. So for us, we deal with personal identifiable data. So that can be address, email, name. But a big chunk of those are, for example, ad tech companies that they might have some identifier, a cookie ID or something like that. And they know that you're have been shopping for like electronics for the last few days, but they don't know that you're like John Smith or whoever. Mm.
Yeah, so some data brokers have to like buy data with other data brokers and like put it all together, right?
Yeah, I think this part is both very interesting, but at the same time, what brings a lot of complexity to the market, because it's not a problem with like a particular company or even a set of particular companies, because someone might collect your data from, I don't know, the apps you're using, I don't know, a calculator asking for your location data and stuff like that. But because there's a whole ecosystem of trading that information, you end up with companies you've never heard about that actually have a lot of data points about you. And it's almost impossible to sort of figure out like what was the original data source for like a particular data point.
Mm. So like if I have apps on my phone, right, you could see like what they're always at. You have to give them permission. And those companies, they are selling that your data to other people that you've never heard of, and it's hard to know where it came from, right?
Very much so. And apps is just one of the sort of sources. And when you have like a free app that seems to be pretty well built, they don't have a like obvious business model. So it's not a subscription. It's like not some in-app purchases. Mm. You have to think like, where's the money coming from? Because building and supporting those apps is expensive. So one thing you can do is like go to their privacy policy, to go to their terms of service. And then the interesting things start to show up when they start writing down that, yes, we collect like this and this information, and we might be sharing with our sort of affiliates and partners and something like that.
Yeah, and then you know. So, as a sales guy, right, I get a bunch of emails sometimes from companies, like I've never heard of them, and it comes from a Gmail address, like, hey, I can give you a list of Splunk users or a list of IBM QRadar users. That's they're data breakers as well. So it's not just like a my problem. It's like a company problem as well.
So, of course, like inbox filling up, it can be annoying, but looking from a sort of a cybersecurity perspective, what I'd be more worried about is that if your employee's personal information is out there, it's a lot easier to then use that information for targeted phishing attacks. So this is something I'd be a bit more concerned. And when it comes to those emails, what's sometimes interesting to do is if they're not coming from a Gmail prompt, what looks like a legit company is you can write back and, hey, how did you acquire your email address? Mm. And it's interesting to see that it's quite often some of those same services.
Okay, so they don't really... Wow, it's interesting. I'm going to do that next time. See if they answer me. But then they're going to expect me to buy something. we talked a little bit about like how they're getting our data. You said it's from apps. Yeah, just so we cover that one more time. So how are data brokers actually getting my data? Like what are the most common methods of acquiring that data besides apps?
So putting apps aside, I think it's worth mentioning if you're, I don't know, registering for a loyalty program or something like that. Again, if you would open up the terms of service, we actually did some research on this before that the amount you're saving on that, I don't know, $15 purchase might be a lot less than they actually will be earning from you. Because with this, you agree that, hey, we will share your shopping habits with our friends and family. That aside, scraping in general, like, is a big, a relatively easy, I would say, way to get this information. And again, this can be from some public government sites that need to disclose some sort of information, social media like LinkedIn, Facebook, etc. Again, everything you post online, more often than not, can be scraped. And when you do this at large scale, you can collect quite a significant data set. And what's interesting afterwards is that you can add another layer on top, is that you have, I don't know, some employment data from LinkedIn. You have some location data. You can start pinpointing, maybe someone more affluent is living in that zip code or that area. So you can sort of predict economic status, you can predict ethnicities, and so on and so forth.
It'd be interesting to have a data broker on to see how they work, because it seems like they have, they scrape, they get some free stuff, and then they put that in a big database, a smart database, AI-powered database, and then they probably buy some data from other people and put it all together, and that's their business model. Interesting. Have you ever spoken to anybody that works for a data broker? That was able to, like, that wanted to, you know, leak an insider from a data broker?
We actually talk with data brokers quite a lot. Because, again, I think one thing to sort of understand and clarify is that when talking about data brokers, we kind of paint it with this dark brush. But the way I like to think about it, it's like, those are companies, in most cases, under a legal business model for their jurisdiction. And from our experience, they kind of fall into the spectrum. On one end, you have companies that use every trick in the book to try to refuse compliance. They use dark patterns, and even they might limit how you can opt out. And for example, under CCPA, they have this right to, like, offer, if I recall correctly, two different methods. And then you get an email saying that's okay, now you need to call this number to verify yourself, and you can do it between that and that hour or something like that. We will try to call you on your phone number, and if you don't respond, we will assume that this request is canceled. So, like, these are real responses we've seen. So this is on one end, but on the other hand, there are a lot of, like, legit companies that actually want to comply, and they do their best to comply in an orderly manner. We have talked quite a lot. Nobody shared their dark secrets, but I think that's to be expected.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're like taking money out of their pocket, I guess, at the end of the day. So if at the spectrum, right? You said there's a spectrum, and I would classify Google and Meta as data brokers, right?
Well, I would expect that they would classify this the subs as advertising platforms, but to support it, they need a ton of personal information for their targeting. So yeah, I've never encountered that you could go to Google and say, hey, sell me a list of users and send me an Excel sheet. So I think they're more closed door in that regard.
There's a difference between data brokers and advertisers. But I guess advertisers are much better at their job if they have data brokers that feed up into their services.
Again, not knowing the sort of internal workings, I think it's fair to assume that a lot of it's what powers the databases, the data that they can't collect themselves. They can just purchase it from the outside.
Right. And then out of interest, like Google and Meta, can you name like some of the biggest data brokers that you know of? Just so both myself and the listeners can like, oh, I've never heard of them. Or maybe they have heard of them.
Sure. So the popular ones in this regard, so Axiom, LexisNexis, Intellius. What's interesting for me when we were researching was that how open they are about like sharing and, hey, like we have personal information on like hundreds of millions of people and we average, I don't know, like 1,500 data points per user and stuff like that. And how is this okay?
Mm. Those are salespeople with no bad conscience, I guess. What do we know about like the protection mechanisms that are in place? Is like, I know in the States, is there any regulation in the States protecting like this sort of trade of information, or what's like the status of legislation around EU and the States?
Mm-hmm, sure. So EU and GDPR is still ahead. California is spearheading with the CCPA. And what's really interesting is that they recently had a new law, Delete Act. So it should be coming in fruition in 2026. And one of the ideas there is to have the sort of one place, one system for California citizens to opt out from data brokers. So it's an interesting trend, and would be interesting to see like how they will be able to halt this vision and push back, because again, it's a very big business. So I'm quite sure they are, won't be taking this lying down.
Do you think they have like lobbyists working in Washington to like keep them alive? Do you imagine that?
Of course. I mean, again, when we're talking about billions and billions of dollars, industries, they have quite a bit at stake.
Of course. Do you know anything about like their like how do they get paid? Like their, is it like subscription models? I know that they're, I imagine they're like API houses that just, do you know anything about that?
So when it comes to those traditional data brokers, it's generally going to be either pricing per data set. So I don't know, you want people over 50 who live in this and that location who, I don't know, interested in something or took out a loan or got married and so on. So you get a data set of thousands or hundreds of thousands of entries and you pay for the data set. Licensing deals is another way. So where you, as you mentioned, so you get access to the database, full database or particular segment of the database via API, and you just pay a sort of fee per year, per month, whatever is agreed. What's interesting in US specifically is the people finder sites, where essentially you can go and type in someone's name, city or state, and essentially anyone with a credit card can purchase the person's, well, usually have of a like home address, sometimes phone number, usually like relative information, sometimes background information and so on. So for me, this one is the one I'm probably most uncomfortable with, because there had been cases where like a judge gets shot because someone has been waiting like near their house. So this is goes beyond cybersecurity, it becomes like sort of physical threats.
And speaking of like those sort of threats, like I think there was one piece of legislation that's already on the way, or something had to happen, because some data broker was selling data about like U.S. troop movements, or they were selling data about like some sort of military thing. I'm not sure if you remember that story, but how are the bad guys like using this information? Like I'm thinking about government type of groups, APTs.
I think with the government, it's always tricky because you can only see what's been sort of leaked or shows up.
Yeah.
For example, there was a case a few years back, but essentially in the Middle East, U.S. government bought information about people's location from like Quran prayer app. Mm-hmm. So like what you mentioned with that, I think with location data specifically, like we use different like trackers for health and fitness and so on. And like, oh, I ran like 10 kilometers today, but we don't realize that we potentially shared like all our routes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember, the US is no better than anybody else, in that regard. Like they're using, I think I remember correctly now, they were buying data from data brokers because they weren't allowed to collect it themselves. So they would just go buy it. And collecting it themselves is probably more expensive than buying it from somebody else because they have purchasing power, which is really interesting. Incogni, right? So sales pitch time. Like how do, if I go on your product and I say, remove me, like what's the process that actually goes on from your side?
Right. So you join. So we will ask some personal information. We try to minimize it, as much as possible. Yeah. Oh, God. No. I think it's important to understand, like one of the limitations, if you would like do it yourself, a lot of the data brokers, they come back and say, okay, we can do it, but we need to verify you and please send us, I don't know, your ID, your utility bills, your... And like you think, God, I don't want you to have like my name and email, and you're asking for my ID.
Yeah.
So these are the kind of topics that we fight them on, because it's one of those sort of gray areas in the like GDPR and CCPA is that the law says that request needs like verification request needs to be proportional. And we say that no, ID is not proportional. Like you're not supposed to have it in the first place. So like just remove my information. So we use those three identifiers like email, name, and address as a sort of verification method for the user. So we don't need to send anything more sensitive to them.
That's really funny that they asked for that, though. It's like, okay, fine, but just give us a few more things to sell first, and then we'll delete you.
Yeah, the irony is somewhere there. Moving forward, so right now the service is slightly different depending on whether you're from Europe or from US. So in both cases, we will send out data removal requests to those, we call them private database data brokers, which essentially, like, you don't really know what they have up front. So you can check their privacy policies also, you have a sort of good idea, but it's not publicly available, that information. So we will send those requests to data brokers, if needed, follow up and essentially do the hard work for you. When it comes to US, like the people finder category of data brokers are there, and it's a big problem. So with them, one of the thing process-wise that's easier is that you can actually go to those sites and check, like, okay, so is, I don't know, John Smith from Missouri there? And I should probably use a more unique name as an example.
Yeah.
But... you can go and you can find the person profile and then you can request to remove that profile. So this is a problem specifically for US, and so that's why it's slightly different in terms of the service.
Mm. So there's actually a lot of like manual work that you have to do on your side to actually make this happen.
There is a lot of automation, there's machine learning and so on and so forth, but at the same time, when dealing with data brokers, not everyone is super excited to be compliant, so like the extra work comes there.
Yeah, but are you using like you're automatically answering their response with something on your side as well? Because it'd be annoying for you to have your you actually have to sit there with the real employee and answer it.
So when it comes to problematic data brokers. So it's generally not going to be an issue with like a specific request, but we're talking with them on a more as a whole level, like, well, you're not fitting into like GDPR's timeline. So what can we do about it? So for us, what this means is that we need to escalate. We need to go to their like chief legal officers, sometimes CEOs and so on, and try to find a way for them to comply.
Interesting. Is it so that you're trying to like negotiate with them to like, okay, any request coming from us, like, first of all, we don't like your business, but whatever, fine, you exist. Second of all, at least if we send you a request, you just delete it and let's find like an automated way to do that. If we ask you, you delete it. Is that kind of the conversations you're having?
It's more in lines, there's a law, you need to comply, let's make it happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Interesting. But then I could see those being interesting conversations. Are you involved in those personally?
Sometimes, again, we have a team who deal with data broker relationships. But yes, yeah, so sometimes I need to be involved. And especially early on, I was in the every call, and they tend to be very different. In some cases, like you sit down and figure out. In some cases, it starts with like a screaming match from one end, and then you're, okay, now relax, let's talk.
Yeah. Were those people actually willing to go on video or like on video meetings, or is it all just like it's a black wall that you meet on the screen sort of?
I would say it's more like you go on video.
Proper business, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it's not one person joining. Usually it's someone from legal, someone from operations, so someone else. So one or a few people might have like the camera turned off, but in general, I think we had more productive calls than we had those very difficult ones.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear at least. Before I leave that topic, like a typical data broker, is it like 10 employees, 20 employees, 30 employees, like in your experience?
No. I mean, as you mentioned, we're talking about hundreds of billions worth of industries. So, you have companies from a few thousand employees. Wow. There are some more boutique data brokers that will have like dozens of employees, but I would say it's very much a combination.
Mm. That means they have a lot of like data scientists, a lot of good people working for a questionable cause. That's interesting.
data scientists and lawyers.
And data scientists and lawyers, yeah. Interesting company party. Like the before and after scenario for like when I signed up for your service after this call, like what's a before and after scenario for me that's going to be your client one day?
Realistically speaking, I think at any given point we have at least a few problematic data brokers that we need to deal with. And this is something that unfortunately sometimes takes months and so on. But normally, like if you use the service for at least a few months, you will notice that new data brokers are coming up. So this is, again, something, an ongoing effort for us to go find, identify, screen.
Threatened.
Then, no, we're trying to be professional.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Yeah. So after a few months, we will repeat the requests. Some of the data brokers, they do have a suppression list. So with them, it's once they remove it, they leave a sub-identifier not to re-add you. But that's still in the sort of minority. So we do need to repeat those requests. And this is something that we're optimizing on to find the sort of sweet spot, like not to send out those requests too often, but at the same time, the goal is to keep your information from those databases as completely as possible.
Yeah. How much is like an individual plan?
Yeah, so it's about 70 euros or dollars per annual plan. Yeah. And I think we're at 13 for a month plan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about it. I was like, hey, it's not too expensive because I knew that there was a lot of work on your side that had to be done. And I was saying that there could be a lot of manual work too. But like the people that are actually going for those services, what can you say about your customers? Like, number one, they're paranoid, they're security people. You know, like if you have any stats around who your customers are.
I think the word I would use is frustrated.
Yeah.
Because, again, especially when it comes to United States, like scam calls, spam calls, spam in general has become such a major issue that like people have like building a habit of not answering the phone if like there's a known number, and for me that's very very me it's very strange, but like what I'm personally most happy about is that when people use the service and they go to Trustpilot, they come in and share feedback and say, hey, I used Incogni for a few months. Like my spam calls decreased drastically, or I'm not getting it anymore. So like when it comes to security and privacy, no news is good news. So yeah, exactly. What this means is that data breach happens somewhere. So you're not on it. So that's like the good part. But at the same time for us, we always wanted to get like so good at tailoring those data removal requests so that people can actually feel the benefit in their day-to-day life. So for me, like that's the use case and that's the benefit that's well, I'm very happy about.
Yeah, sounds cool. I mean, we don't really have that. Yeah, we do have spam calls in Norway, actually. I didn't think that was a use case. Like, do you have any, like, would you provide your customers with, like, some stats or some dashboards about the progress of...
Of course. So there's a dashboard, there's activity log just to know, like, what's changing. And we do have a sort of detailed view to look at the individual level. So what's going on, how many requests we sent, and so on.
Mm. So my crystal ball question, moving forward, what's on your roadmap? What are you thinking about the future of this industry? What concerns you and what makes you happy?
All right, let's go from the back.
I just gave you nine questions. You can figure out which one you want to answer.
So for me, I am happy about and I'm optimistic about that privacy laws, not just in the United States, but across the globe, they do get, some countries that didn't have it now has those. They do get more comprehensive. So this is the sort of optimistic, faith in humanity restored kind of thing. What genuinely worries me is the evolution of AI agents and how this can translate into cybersecurity threats. Because when you have AI agents, you can connect them with targeted data sets of a lot of personal information. And now you have a machine for phishing attacks and scams on a probably unprecedented level. And you can do it at scale. You can automate it. And it's something that I have been thinking a lot about. Like, so how do you protect yourself? Like, combine this with the deepfakes. Like, we're having our conversation. It wouldn't be rocket science for them to take and use our voices. And I really hope that on the security side, we will be able to sort of match the pace of evolution. But the one thing that for me comes up in terms of like future proofing is to minimize the data out there. And it's not just, I don't know, what we're posting on social media, but very much about those private databases, because they have a lot more data points that than we publish on LinkedIn or like Facebook. Mm. And then hopefully, when those AI agents need to choose like who to target for the phishing attack, they will probably target someone that where they have like 1,000 data points instead of someone where they have like 10 data points.
That's true. Yeah.
So that part is a bit scary.
I'm just thinking like, besides buying your service, right? What else can I do to like reduce my attack service? Should I be doing? And I already do this today. Like I have like an alter ego. I have a fake name, and I have a Proton mail address with it. And I had this experience where I just started using my fake name everywhere, and I bought like a ski membership here in Oslo, and I used my fake name and I had my picture. And then they were like, "Hey, let me see your ID," and I was like, oh, "Fuck." It's not my real name, right? It has my picture, but it's my fake name. I had to like convince them that like, this is fake, but it's on purpose fake. It's actually me and I paid it. So let me in, you know? So there are downsides to having like a fake alter ego.
Yeah, I don't think it's a really good idea. And one thing, sort of alternative to removing your personal information is to kind of polluting the data sets.
Exactly.
So you can use like different names, different emails, different browser agents, and so on, and just try to mess up with the data.
Yeah. But that's also then you have to have a password manager, and you're going to go through these awkward situations, I guess. You don't do that, do you? Personally,
using email masking and phone masking.
Yeah, just making fake people. Yeah.
I do use like temporary emails if I need to for any service. I know that doesn't actually require my full name, so I will not use it. And I'm getting a bit paranoid in that regard.
Yeah. Welcome to the industry. Last thing, I know it's kind of hard to answer, but like you were talking about this AI thing, right? And like there are You've heard of ChatGPT, Gemini, right? There are evil versions of those. Worm GPT, fraud GPT. There's like all those things out there. It wouldn't surprise me, at least, if those GPTs were actually one day, or that somebody's going to make a tour, they just make agreements with all these data brokers and they get sucked up in like this evil AI. That must be like around the corner, like very soon. Do you agree?
I'm actually curious if the sort of good versions don't get trained on some of those data sets. But I don't know, just thinking out loud here. In general, again, when it comes to those AI tools, again, for me, the bigger concern is like, can they think of and create attacks in terms of like, say, security using the data? And if you feed to those tools, I don't know, a data set of like 100 million people with, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 data points, and you ask them to, okay, so how do I create an attack? What they would come up with?
They could just be like, okay, Robbie Peralta, he works here. We see from his Google Maps that he's on the way there. Like, I mean, that's not even that many data points, and you could do something scary then, you know? So.
Yeah.
Well, I must say I'm very impressed with your, even though you work for a company that like is going up against the data brokers, you've been very professional. You haven't said anything like bad about them, so I respect that. And it was really fun having this conversation with you. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, had a pleasure. And thank you for inviting me.
Of course. I'm going to go see if I can get a data broker on the podcast after this to defend themselves. But I don't think they're going to answer that call.
it would be interesting. I would love to listen to that conversation.
All right, Dash. Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Well, that's all for today, folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Mnemonic Security Podcast. If you have any concepts or ideas that you'd like us to discuss on future episodes, please feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn or to send us a mail to podcast@mnemonic.no. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.